have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Time to take a look at the world of insects. This time of year, we see large numbers of some insects, and we'll find out why that's the case with our guest today, PJ Leash, in the studio with me, manager of the UW-Madison Insect Diagnostic Lab. And it's great to have him back. And we're going to be talking about fall insects, and he'll also take your bug-related questions. So I hope you'll join in. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page. And PJ Leash, welcome back.
Pleasure to be here, Larry.
You know, just the other day, I was taking my trash bin. I was rolling it back to, you know, the area off the side of the house. Suddenly, I'm getting stung by something. Mm-hmm. Which I then immediately ran away, and there were, I would call them sweat bees.
Okay.
Small bees, I couldn't figure out where they were coming from, and finally I looked, and I had, next to those bins, I had about a half a bag of sort of a compost soil, and the bag was, there was a little opening, and they had apparently, I haven't gone in to look, but they had apparently created a little living space there, and they weren't happy with me rolling up there with a noisy trash bin. You hear a little of that these days?
Well, yeah, in general, I mean, and if you think of phenology, just this progression of things through the season, everything changes through time. And I get lots of calls about wasps and yellow jackets and paper wasps and bald-faced hornets this time of year, as well as our box elder bugs and things like that. But the wasps in particular, this is the time of the year when they are most noticeable. And this is probably the time where folks have the most kind of negative interactions where they startle them and get a bunch of stings.
Yeah, I've certainly got, I have about a half a dozen, you know, and I'm getting, and I didn't even, it took a second or two, you know, what the heck, you know, I'm starting to get these little stinging. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, I got to get out of here. And those stings, you know, sore for a couple of days, actually.
Yeah, and everyone reacts a little bit differently, but the main story with things like yellow jackets and paper wasps is that the colony has probably been there for a while. They often start them in spring, but they build up very slowly. And when that nest is small and there's few individuals present, they're fairly docile. And then all of a sudden, this time of the year, you could have had a nest there for a couple months. And
yeah,
all of a sudden, they're ornery and they'll come after you and sting you quite a few times.
Yeah, so now I'm just figuring I'm just going to, you know, be careful when I go back there and wait for cold weather.
Well, and that's not a bad approach, to be honest, because that colony of wasps and yellow jackets and things like that should be dying out typically sometime in October, and really for two reasons. One is they're starving to death. They are predators of other insects, and as the leaves fall off the tree and aphids and caterpillars kind of disappear for you, they run out of food. But also we get a couple hard frosts, and that often finishes them off as well.
Yeah, so I can go back to that soil bag. It'll be kind of fun after a frost.
Yeah.
I'll go back and open that bag up and look what was inside. It'll be kind of interesting.
Yeah.
So maybe that's my payment for the stings that I had to take the chance to look and see what kind of nest or whatever there is in there. Well, paper wasps, I think, are really interesting.
They are fascinating creatures. We have a handful or more different species in our area. And paper wasps are the ones that make kind of the open structure nests. So
yeah.
These are the ones you can look up in your soffit area, and you can look in and you can see that kind of hexagonal honeycomb-like structure. They don't make honey. It's a paper mache type nest, but you can look right inside of it and see who's there.
About the size of a baseball or so.
Yeah, it depends on the species. I've seen some where that nest almost gets to be the size of a small dinner plate if it's a good size nest, especially if they got started early in the spring and built up over the last couple months. But typically they are smaller nests than some of our other wasps, like bald-faced hornets, where you can get that basketball-sized nest up in a tree sometimes.
Which is really cool.
Yeah.
Really cool. Well, every one of our lines is filled, so let's go to the phones and to Paul in Door County. Paul, hello. Thank you for calling.
Hey, how are you guys?
Great.
Quick question. I was shampooing my rugs, the carpets, and we had a problem with carpenter ants. And now since I've shampooed the rugs, there are these, they're almost 2 inches long. They look segmented like a carpenter ant, but they have wings. And all they do is kind of walk drunkenly on the carpet. They don't try to get out of the way or anything, but they're everywhere. I don't know what they are.
Okay, so the important clue there was the wings on them. So you can have a number of different ant species nesting somewhere in your home. For carpenter ants, it's usually in soft wood, in a damaged window frame or something like that. There's some other species of ants too, but what will happen at certain points in the ant life cycle, the colony produces winged males and females. And these we would refer to as swarmers. They're going to leave the nest. Ideally, they would exit outside, fly around, mingle with members from other colonies, mate. The males usually die shortly thereafter, whereas the females would kind of hunker down, and their ultimate goal is to start a new colony. Occasionally, though, this does happen indoors. The good news about that is it tends to be a fairly short-lived thing. You might notice winged ants for a few days. It's probably not going to be worth spraying anything for them. For the time being, I'd probably just take out the hose attachment on the vacuum cleaner and suck them up.
Good deal. Great. All right. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. David in Duluth, Minnesota, we're on to you now. Hi, David. Thank you for calling.
Hi, good morning. We have a problem with cluster flies. I understand a little about their life cycle, and we are in the process of sealing windows with weather stripping and all that sort of thing. But my question is, why are the cluster flies dying? They seem to get in the house, and then they die. If they're looking to overwinter, they're wasting their time. What's going on there?
Yeah, so you really made a good point there. And the story with cluster flies is that they're trying to get in for an overwintering spot, but ideally they would get just beneath the siding or up into a soffit area where it's cool but not too cold and warm enough they're not going to get a really hard freeze. What happens, though, is if they accidentally wander too far inside, maybe they make it all the way inside or they come down through a light fixture, they are actively burning up that calorie storage that they had for winter, and they basically use up all their fuel, so to speak. And also indoors in a modern home with AC and things like that, it's often too dry for them. So they're also desiccating and dying because of that. So they're basically making a mistake by coming all the way in. They'd rather get just in under the siding or in the soffit area so that they can leave again in spring.
There we go.
We're plagued again by that in the spring. March or April, they start coming out again.
Yeah, so what can happen then is the ones that did get in a good overwintering spot start becoming active. And if they take a wrong turn and instead of making it outdoors, they see light through a little bit of a light fixture up in the attic area or something like that, and they make it into the living space, all of a sudden we get this burst of activity of cluster fly adults wandering around the windows in February, March, or April. And again, it's basically a dead end for them.
Yeah, they're goners.
Yeah, they're goners. They're not going to make it. They came out the wrong way. In a case like that, sucking them up with a hose attachment on your vacuum cleaner is probably the best course of action at that point because they don't have long to live.
There you go.
It's a daily activity.
Yeah, I imagine. Thanks, David. Appreciate the call. Janine in Eau Claire, let's go to you next. Hi, Janine.
Hi. I have a question about fleas.
Okay.
It's flea time. They want to move in. And I'm wondering, of course, you know, we have the plague, but do they carry illness and sickness?
Do you have dogs and cats? Is that your issue? Or?
Yeah, I have dogs and cats, and I'm afraid of fleas.
And they come, they're out and in, of course. All right.
Yeah. It's time of the year that they come in.
So do fleas carry disease?
In theory, yes, although when you start looking at it, there's lots of different species of fleas. And for the common fleas that we have around here, we really don't have disease issues. Historically speaking, there are different species of fleas that have been associated with plague and things like that. But for the most part, in Wisconsin here, our common cat flea, we don't have medical disease concerns with it. It's more of that physical biting and irritation for our pets if they pick up fleas and get them indoors. And if fleas do get in, they technically can bite people. Tends to be a kind of a irritation and a nuisance, but they're not going to be giving you any diseases.
There we go. Good to know, isn't it, Janine? Thanks a lot for calling. Let's go to Argyle. Talk to Matt for a minute here. Hi, Matt.
Hi, how are you guys?
Great.
Good, good. We've got an older dairy barn where I've got something burrowing holes in the beams, and I had caught what I thought was the culprit and sent it in to you all, and it came back as some sort of like a parasitic wasp that they assumed was probably feeding on whatever was eating in the beams. But I haven't been able to catch anything or see anything moving between holes other than these kind of small wasp-like creatures. And the holes are probably, I don't know, they're probably about, if you took like a trim nail or something and drove it into the wood, they're pretty small, but they're just, and it's pretty localized to a couple of spots.
Do they leave a kind of a dust on the floor, or?
There's a small amount of dust, like I know, like powder post beetles, but I don't know, there's a small amount that I've seen in certain areas where, you know, like where a beam meets or something, I'll see a little pile there. Like I said, I haven't been able to actually see the culprit. And I guess my two questions are, what do you think it might could be? And the other is, if these parasitic wasps are feeding on them, I would rather not do something that's killing the things that's...
Yeah, got understood. I thought about powder post beetles right away. PJ, what about
well,
you?
Well, I'm also thinking along the same lines, Larry. Some of the important clues here, we got an old barn with wooden beams. Assuming that wood is in good shape and is dry, powder post beetles would be my top suspect. And there's actually a couple of different types. Sometimes those holes can vary in size. Now, if you have a particular hole where there's a live, active beetle in there, you do tend to see that fine sawdust come out. One of the challenges with powder post beetles, you can have old holes in the wood from 20, 50 years ago. Yeah. There's not going to be sawdust necessarily coming out of those at the moment. But I would be really suspicious of powder post beetles. There probably are some tiny parasitic wasps that may be attacking those. There could also be some wasps that are simply utilizing the pre-existing holes for their nesting habits.
Sure.
That could be a possibility there. But overall, my top suspect would be powder post beetles at this point.
Okay. And what would you recommend as far as treating something, or how would I...
And these are beams way up in the barn, right?
Well, they're most places I can get at them.
Okay. All right.
And one question for you. Is the wood finished at all? I would assume probably not, because it's a barn.
No, there's some whitewashing in the lower portion because, way
right.
back when it was used as a dairy, but
sure.
the rest of it is all unfinished. And
okay.
Yep.
And that also would fit with powder post beetles. They like unfinished wood. What could be done in a case like this, there are some chemicals that are based on the boron compounds, borate salts and things like that. They use these extensively in log cabin homes and things like that. It's
yeah.
basically a wood preservative. You can paint, or in some cases, you can actually spray it onto the wood. It wicks in, and that's really going to be kind of a long-term solution. But I had asked about if the wood was finished. If it were finished or painted, you'd have to strip that off before applying the borate product. So some of the products out there you could look into, Timbor, T-I-M-B-O-R, Boracare. There's a few other ones out there as well. If you did an internet search and look for log cabin home supply, they often tend to sell these types of products.
Yeah. And that is a very safe material, if I'm not mistaken.
Right, yeah. Chemically, it's very similar to essentially borax soap. It acts as a kind of slow stomach poison to the insects. If they chew through some of the wood that had been treated with it, it'll affect them. But overall, the risks to humans are relatively minor.
Matt, thanks a bunch. Appreciate the call. Visiting today with PJ Leash from the UW-Madison Insect Diagnostic Lab. I'm Larry Mueller, Jill Nadeau, our producer, here on the Ideas Network. Coming up at 1 o'clock today on the program 1A, Joshua Johnson and his guests talk about the world's reaction to President Trump's first speech to the United Nations. That's at 1. Right now, taking a look at the world of insects with PJ Leash, one open line at 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page. And PJ, if you look at our Facebook page, man, we have a lot of insects. Steve wonders, here we've got a spider. How would you describe that spider?
Well, from what I can see in the picture, it definitely looks like it's pretty good size. It appears to be from our orb weaver group. And when it comes to late season spiders, orb weavers are probably one of the absolute commonest ones we can see. They're often very good size, very conspicuous. They can have very bright colors on the body. I suspect if we were to see the dorsal or backside of this one, the picture we're looking at the underside, there'd probably be some flashy black or yellow or whitish patterns on there. It looks to be one of our garden spiders from the genus Argiope, which can be really common this time of the year.
We've got an orb weaver on our porch, and you know it's amazing how they can spin those webs. This spider had to spin probably 8 feet on either side, or maybe 6 feet on either side, let's say, and place it right in the middle of the porch.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really common to see them on porches, back decks. I know I've got one I've been watching on our back deck, which is a good-sized cross orb weaver, but there's at least 8 to 10 very common species this time of the year.
Ann sent another photo of, we've got a caterpillar here that's yellow and black striped, white stripes on it too. It's really pretty, and she wonders what it is. And
yeah, so this is a monarch caterpillar, and looking at the comment there, it looks like she's wondering, will this particular caterpillar make it? I would say there's a chance. We're getting towards that end of the season for monarchs. From what I can see in the picture, it's probably pretty good size, so if that individual pupated soon and turned into an adult, and as long as the frosts hold off, that one may have a chance to make it down south to Mexico.
And this one is about the size of a nickel. It's a, what do you call it, scary-looking thing. It's a nice close-up photo of a spider, is it?
Yep. Yeah, so this is another one of those orb weaver spiders, and I can see the dorsal side. I suspect it might be one of the bridge orb weavers, although I'd have to look at my spider book and compare some of the color patterns to narrow down the exact species, but definitely one of our large, conspicuous late fall orb weaver spiders.
And we'll just take one more and then go back to the phones here. Nathaniel sent one of Japanese beetles, and that gives us plenty of Japanese beetles. Those look like grape leaves to me.
Yeah.
And let's talk about Japanese beetles for a minute.
Well, I guess Japanese beetles this year have just been awful from the reports that I've had, definitely up most areas statewide. I suspect the reason for that is we've now had two very mild consecutive winters.
Yeah.
When we had that brutal winter about 4 or so years ago, it really killed off a lot of the grubs in the soil. I think they've really come roaring back onto the scene. I know on the west side of Madison and elsewhere I've been driving in the state, I swear you can pick out linden trees from about half mile away because they've just been turned completely brown from the beetle feeding. I'm a little nervous if we end up with another mild winter. It wouldn't surprise me if Japanese beetles were bad again next year. If we get a colder winter, maybe that'll knock them down a little bit. But boy, did they ever pop up on the radar this year.
They sure did. Lee in Williams Bay has a question for you. Hi, Lee. Thank you for calling.
Hello, Larry. Hello, PJ. I have a section of my garden that I just have milkweed in. For the butterflies, especially the monarch. And I have quite an infestation of caterpillars, and I know they're not monarch caterpillars. They're about an inch long, and they're striped yellow, black, yellow, black, yellow, black, and they have like little protrusions. They almost look like they are sprouting fur or hair. And yeah. I wondered what they are. They're all over.
I bet you got a pretty good idea on that one, PJ.
Yeah, so based on the description, especially that comment about the fur-like structures, it most likely is a creature called the milkweed tussock moth, which tends to be kind of black and white and orangish. And they've got these tufts of little hair. Technically, we'd call them seedy, but it's a very fuzzy-looking caterpillar. I've had lots and lots of reports of these this year, I suspect, because lots of folks are growing milkweed for the monarchs. It's just one of these native species that happens to use milkweed as a food source. So it's just one of those things that'll pop up if you've got milkweed growing in your area.
Yeah, there you go. Thanks a lot for calling. John in Mount Horeb, let's go to you next. Hi, John.
Hi, and thank you. I have a follow-up question about paper wasps.
Yeah.
I have an older garage, and I've got a large paper wasp nest inside the garage in a corner they get in and out through a crack in the siding. It's quite a large nest, I would say, again, size of a basketball or larger. Now, they're not bothering me at all, so, I mean, I don't want to spray or anything, but my question is, if I just leave that, will they not return next year, or will they return and...
Yeah, good. Another good question.
Cause problems or...
Yeah, so great question. In theory, as long as they're not bothering you, and if they're in a corner of the garage where you're not going to kind of bump into them and get stung, you could simply go with the wait-and-watch approach, because that colony is going to be starving out in about the next probably 5-6 weeks. If we get a couple of earlier hard frosts, that'll perhaps finish them off sooner. But given enough time, that colony is going to die out. Typically, with yellow jackets and paper wasps, they don't reuse the nest from year to year. So if you waited until, you know, they are gone for sure, maybe into December, January, something like that, you could take that nest down, but they really shouldn't be using the nest again next year. There's a slight chance, if that just happened to be a good spot, a different queen might find the same location next year and try building a nest in a similar location. But if you watch for it and take care of that nest early in the season in May or June, when it's small, it's a lot easier to deal with than when it's basketball size this time of the year.
In the
okay,
meantime,
excellent.
It's a pretty
Thank
cool
you.
Thing for the kids to
oh,
look
they
at
are.
After afterwards, or maybe take it to the local school.
Yeah.
Bill in Madison, your turn. Hi, Bill. Thank you for calling.
Oh, thank you. I live in a part of Madison last year that had a first-time heavy infestation of what we were told were eastern stink bugs.
Yeah.
And it's earlier than they hit us last year, but I'm starting to find a few of them getting into the house. Are we in for another heavy run?
I suspect so. I suspect what you're seeing is probably the invasive brown marmorated stink bug, which showed up in the state a few years back. And just like box elder bugs, it has the habit of sneaking into people's homes looking for an overwintering spot. Now, really, this insect has been pretty quiet for a few years. It was first spotted about 2010, and until about 2015 or so, we didn't have many reports in the state. In the last 2 years, those floodgates have kind of opened up. We're getting more and more reports. So if you had them bad last year, you're probably going to have them bad again this year, unfortunately, and also going into the future, too.
Oh, goody.
There you go. Something to look forward to, Bill.
Right.
Thanks a lot for calling. Oh, man. Back to the Facebook page for a minute, because here's a really cool-looking spider that Tyrone sent us, and wondering what it is. I would just to describe it, its legs are, what did you call it? There's black stripes on the legs, and
yeah,
the legs are sort of a light tan color.
Yeah, so there's these very distinct, conspicuous kind of alternating bands on the legs, pale and black bands. From this shot, I can see the color pattern on the abdomen well enough. It's definitely one of our orb weavers, and with the four distinct white dots, it looks like it's our shamrock orb weaver, if you think of a four-leaf clover mm-hmm. with those four white dots on there. Again, this is one of these very common, very flashy, conspicuous orb weaver spiders that we see in late summer and into early fall.
And they're not going to hurt you.
No.
They're not going to bite, are they?
Very unlikely. I have picked them up and held them a couple of times. For the most part, if they see it coming, they're probably going to scurry and run away. That's kind of their defensive nature. Bites would be very unlikely. Even if they did bite you, it would probably be similar to a mild bee sting, and it would really be a defensive action of the spider. Overall, I think they're rather pretty creatures and beneficial because they're feeding on insects out there.
Yeah, for sure. Cheryl sent another one of another orb weaver, I think.
Yeah,
kind of similar to the one Tyrone sent.
Yeah, I would say it definitely looks like an orb weaver. I can't quite see the color pattern on the abdomen well enough to narrow down a species, but another one of those late summer, early fall, very
really
conspicuous
pretty.
Orb weavers. Yeah.
Yeah, as you're listening to the show, go to our Facebook page and take a look. We've got tons of really cool photos, and many of them are orb weavers for sure. Well, Rod in Weyerhaeuser has a question. Let's go there. Hi, Rod.
Hello, Larry. Thank you. Good program again. Say, I got a question on spiders. I know they're not technically insects, but they're in that category, I guess. But the spiders that you find once in a while when you're out in the woods cutting, like oaks that die and shed their bark, or popple. I found them in popple, and they're always up in the trees, up high, because sometimes I've cut down some dead white oak or red oak, and they're like zebra. They're probably a lake spread, like a silver dollar. I mean, they're good size, but they're like zebra, white and black, stripes, you know, kind of, and hairy. And you always find, if you're going to find one, you're going to find a whole bunch of them. They're like messed up there. I was just kind of wondering what those were. And also, I was always wondering, what is the real benefit of hornets besides getting your attention?
All right. Couple of different questions. What do you think, PJ?
Well, with the spider, at this point, without seeing a picture, I'd maybe lean towards some type of wolf spider, just because it sounded like they were pretty good sized. Wolf spiders can be some of our larger spiders in the state. There are certain species that can have some bands and kind of stripes on the body. So with a large size spider outdoors, I would lean towards one of those. Next time you see them, Rod, if you can snap a picture or two and send it to me at the UW Insect Diagnostic Lab, I'd be able to confirm from that, but I suspect it may be some type of wolf spider.
Yeah, makes sense. Thanks, Rod. Appreciate the call. Michael on Facebook wonders if he can let his rain barrel fill back up without needing to worry about mosquitoes breeding.
Yeah, so if you're doing things like rain gardening and you have the rain barrels, there's a potential for that stagnant water to be attractive to certain types of mosquitoes. One of the best things you could do is use some fine mesh screening over the openings to physically keep females from getting in there. That would prevent egg laying in the first place. That's probably one of the easiest and simplest things you could do.
Carrie on Ontonagon, Michigan, up next with a question. Hi, Carrie.
Hey, hi. Great show again. Listen, I wanted to see if you could talk about mason bees a little bit. I've seen a few around here, and I understand that people are starting to use them to replace honeybees for pollination.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to, I'm going to make a nest this winter and put it out in the spring and take some pictures then, and we'll get back to you next year. But if you could just talk about mason bees a little bit, that'd be
sure.
Great.
Sure. So mason bees are one of these solitary type bees, and essentially what that means is that the females have their own nests, and they typically like to nest in tubes of some kind. And so if you hop on the internet and search for mason bees, you can actually buy kits of bee houses and order bee pupae and kind of have a colony in your area. In contrast, things like bumblebees and honeybees are social creatures. They build large colonies together. So the mason bees, again, are solitary nesters. They've got kind of a different strategy. Now, there have been some folks looking at mason bees for certain agricultural settings. Orchards, for example, they may have some use. Now, one difference between honeybees and some of these mason bees and other solitary bees is that the solitary bees, they tend to be picky eaters, if you will. They may go to certain types of plants, whereas something like a honeybee can be much more of a generalist. It can potentially go to a lot of different plants. And so honeybees can be used in a lot of different types of agriculture, whereas the orchard bees may have more of kind of a narrow use, if you think about it. They might work in certain systems, but not in others.
I know they use them in Canada a lot up there.
Yeah.
It's a little colder, you know, mm-hmm. out of the range of the honeybee a little bit. And then with honeybees declining, people are starting to do so, and the mason bees are amazing pollinators.
Mm-hmm.
If you can get them going. Anyway, I'm going to have fun this spring and try to get some going.
All right, sounds like a plan, Carrie. Thanks a lot for calling. Yeah, let us know how it works out. Sherry in Elkhorn, it's your turn. Hi, Sherry.
Hi. We have, I believe they're called ground bees, nesting like behind our cement steps coming out of our patio door. And we've tried for a couple of years various different sprays to try and get rid of them. Or my husband tried, you know, filling up the space with that foam, spray foam, which I have to tell you looks really nasty, but we don't know what to do about them. And I don't know, are they beneficial for flowers? I don't know.
Yeah, so I guess in this case, are we dealing with kind of one fairly good entrance hole and a lot of black and yellow, what you're calling bees, coming out of it?
Yeah, except that if we plug up the hole, they find another way in.
Okay. Okay. What I really wonder in this case, I'm suspicious you're not dealing with bees. I suspect you may be dealing with ground nesting yellow jackets. Typically, if I get a call about ground bees or angry ground bees, it usually ends up being yellow jackets. The story with those is they start their colony from scratch, and they're not great diggers, so they need a pre-existing cavity of some kind. They build that colony up in the spring, and by this time of the year, it's at full size. Couple things when it comes to treating ground nests for yellow jackets. Folks often go to aerosol sprays as their first kind of tool in the toolbox because that's the common wasp spray you find at the hardware store or garden center. The aerosols usually don't work very well in those situations because the little droplets kind of settle and the critters don't contact it very much. Instead, if you can find a dust or powder formulation that we puff into there, then as they come and go, they track that into the nest and wipe out a colony. There also are some newer products that look like an aerosol can, but they come with a little straw or tube, like a WD-40 can. It's a liquid that foams up and greatly expands, and it's intended specifically for ground nesting yellow jackets. And so that could be something else you could try. Now, because you've had them there several years in a row, that tells me there's probably some good hollow void down there that they can access. So once that colony is gone for the year, sometime over the late fall, winter, or early spring, I really take a closer look at that and see if we can find where exactly that cavity is and really seal it up. That, I think, will help prevent them next year.
There you go. Good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Back to Facebook for a minute. Paula wonders, apparently has a problem with wasps that she needs going to need to spray, and wonders if she can wait until dusk tonight and then spray. And then, again, you're probably thinking that dust is better.
Yeah, so it depends a little bit on the situation, but in general, waiting till dusk or even after dark is a good approach, especially if it's a cool night. If it's down into the 50s or maybe even the 40s, wasps, yellow jackets, things like that, they're going to be pretty lethargic just with the colder temperatures. If it's an exposed nest that you can see, like a paper wasp nest on your soffit area, an aerosol spray works good. If it's a nest in a kind of hard-to-reach spot, inaccessible spot, in the ground, in a wall cavity, then those dusts or powders tend to work better in those cases.
Back to Facebook. Ken's got a photo up of kind of an orange and black bug. It looks a little square almost, and wonders what it is.
Yeah, so this one's a beetle, Larry, and it's from the family Sylphidae, and it's one of our burying beetles. And folks may have heard of the American burying beetle, which is an endangered species, but there is a dozen or more other species that can be fairly common, and this is one of those burying beetles. They're often associated with dead animals. That's what they use to raise their young, but sometimes you just bump into them in odd spots as well.
Let's go to Lynn in Madison next. Hi, Lynn.
Hi, how are you today, Larry?
Great, appreciate the call.
Well, PJ, I have a question, a follow-up to the caller about the ground bees. I have two nests, one in the ground that started out 1 inch in diameter, and these are, I should tell you, these are half-inch long, maybe a little over that, not a furry body, so I imagine that they're wasps. Started out with a 1-inch hole, and now the hole is 10 inches in diameter, not radius, diameter. I've never seen anything grow that big. It's been 1 week. And I wasn't going to do anything with them. I put powder down 2 days ago. That doesn't seem to have done anything. So now I'm asking, because I'm concerned that when it rains, since this is so close to my foundation, it's going to affect the water coming into the basement. My question is, how deep is that hole? Because they go in and it obviously curves or turns, and does it come back up close to the surface? Can I dig these things out at night? They're not aggressive.
Hmm. Sure. So I guess I have a personal experience along these lines. When I was first starting as a grad student, I helped another student who was studying ground nesting yellow jackets, and we went out night and specifically dug up a nest, because he needed it for research. And the thing we had to do, though, we had to knock them out with ether. And you dig down in the soil, and we had to go down. The nest itself is a papier-mâché nest, just like above ground, except it's down in the soil. And it may only be down a few inches. The bulk of the nest may be a foot or more down. But as soon as we hit the nest with the shovel and oxygen started getting in, we had to work very quickly to scoop it into tubs to take back to the lab to work with. So it can be down a little ways, maybe a foot for that bulk of the nest. In general, I probably wouldn't recommend trying to dig it up yourself, just because if you do that and they haven't been incapacitated, you're likely to get stung. What I would maybe do, if the powders haven't been working very well, you could try one of those liquid expanding foam type products you can find at hardware stores and give that a try. Otherwise, if you wait long enough until that colony dies out, then later in fall or in winter, I would kind of dig around in that area and maybe fill it in if there are any concerns about water drainage.
Okay, simple enough. Well, thanks for your time.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling, Len. And Sherry and Spooner, it's your turn. Hi, Sherry.
Hi, I'm calling from Spooner.
Okay.
And I wanted to just report that I've seen some sphinx moths that I have never seen before in my 66 years. And one of them I identified as a Titan sphinx moth. And they were eating off of the phlox flowers.
Okay.
Yeah, so it turns out we've got a number of different species of sphinx moths in our area. Some can be fairly small, like our hummingbird clearwing sphinx moths. Some of them can have wingspans of several inches. Some of the species will have very hummingbird-like behavior and can sit there and hover in front of flowers, and they can go to a fairly wide variety of flowers. Some of the other ones will go to certainly other plants. Overall, from my observations, it does seem to be a good year for sphinx moths. I've had lots and lots of reports scattered from throughout the state, so your observations don't surprise me. It seems to be a pretty good year for them overall.
They're beautiful to watch.
Oh, yeah, they're fun to watch. Thank you, Sherry.
Sure.
Appreciate the call. And I want to go back to Facebook for a second, because Ann sent us a photo of something that looks like it's from a Halloween, she says, and hard to describe. It's got hairy legs and a kind of a white top head, I think, and then some wings that are gray and a little darker, almost black.
Yeah, so this one's definitely an interesting-looking moth.
Man.
I'd have to check my moth book to confirm. I have seen this one a couple of times before. It looks like it's probably something from the genus Tolypi, T-O-L-Y-P-I, I believe, but definitely an odd-looking moth, and I'd have to check my moth book to confirm the exact species, though.
Man, go to our Facebook page and take a look at that one. That is really something from Ann. Thank you, Ann, for posting that. I appreciate it. Well, lots of callers online. Still one open line at 800-642-1234. You can always post on our Facebook page. We love those photos for sure. Larry Mueller here with my guest, PJ Leash, from the UW-Madison Insect Diagnostic Lab, here on the Ideas Network. Looking at the world of insects with our guest, P.J. Leash, from the UW-Madison Insect Diagnostic Lab, I'm Larry Mueller. Thanks so much for joining us today. Hey, we're having a lot of fun here. Lots of great photos up on our Facebook page. We got great questions. Julie in Eau Claire has one for you, P.J. Let's go there. Hi, Julie.
Hi. I've got a nest of little bees, and they move so fast I cannot get a good look at them. They're just little bees, like tiny honeybees. They've got a nest inside the milk house walls, and I go in and out the door right next to them, and they're buzzing there. I have yet to get stung. This has been going on for about a month. Those cold nights and early mornings don't seem to bother them at all. They're active and flying around, but I've never got stung. But if I forget and slam that door, there's a few of them. They'll go after me by my head and neck for a long ways, but they do not sting. And I'm just wondering what the heck they are.
Well, I'm suspicious they might be some type of yellow jacket. And we do have a number of yellow jacket species that can nest in hollow voids of some kind. So a wall void in this case. I wonder if there's enough heat there at maybe keeping them a little bit more active at night. If you disturb them, they certainly can pursue you. I had a case myself a couple weeks back up north where luckily I had a baseball cap on. Otherwise, they probably would have stung me in the head a couple of times. But I really suspect it may be some type of yellow jacket. Now, when it comes to yellow jackets, if they are in a spot where stings are likely, you know, it may make sense to draw that line in the sand and do something about them. If they're in a spot where they're really not bothering anyone, you can always leave them. That colony's going to die out on its own in the next probably 5-6 weeks. And yellow jackets overall do some good out there. And I know a couple callers had kind of asked about this. I'm glad we're having a chance to talk about it. First off, they're predators. They can go after caterpillars and other pest insects in your garden or flower bed. So they can do some kind of biological control for us. They also will sometimes go to flowers looking for nectar, a sugar source. And as they do that, they end up doing a little bit of pollination too. So I often tell folks if that nest is in the back corner of your yard, no one's going to mess with it. Just leave it be. They're actually helping control some pests in your garden. If they're up near that front or back door, sometimes you got to step in and intervene.
All right.
That's just, I can't figure out why they haven't stung me, because I'm going in and out, and every time I open and shut that door, it does kind of disturb them. They're mm-hmm. right next to the door, but they have not stung me.
Yes. Well, from my experience, sometimes the colonies can have a little bit of different temperament. Sometimes they're just really ornery. Sometimes they're more docile. I have seen lots of cases, though, where you can have that nest there for weeks and weeks through the summer, and all of a sudden it reaches that big peak size this time of the year. They're getting desperate for food. They're a little bit more aggressive, and you might not have had any stings, and all of a sudden they start really getting kind of ornery, and you might get some stings eventually.
All right. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. And we have Donna in Greenfield up next. Hi, Donna.
How are you today?
Great. Appreciate your call. What have you got for us?
Well, I have a bunch. Well, it was mud daubers that I saw in my storage unit, and that was early, early in the spring, and I saw like two. And I thought, okay, well, it's not a big deal. I will deal with it later. Now there's so many, I can't get ants.
Okay.
There's like at least 20 flying around the door mm-hmm. when I was there.
Okay.
Going in and out, and it's like, how do I get rid of them?
Okay. Well, usually when I think of mud daubers, they tend to be fairly solitary creatures. If you were to get a picture of them, that may help just confirm. I want to make sure we're not dealing with a yellow jacket nest in a wall void or in the roof there, for example. But if you're seeing a lot of the mud nests on the walls, that would suggest mud daubers. In terms of preventing them, there's not a whole lot that we can do other than perhaps inspecting the wall around it. If there were obvious holes or entrance points, or maybe a garage door or something didn't seal up snugly enough, if we tighten that up, that may prevent them from getting in. Otherwise, they're actually fairly docile creatures because they don't have big colonies the way that yellow jackets do. And so they usually won't bother you at all. I've had plenty of times where I just take a putty knife and scrape the mud off, and that kind of puts an end to that particular little nest.
Okay.
Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call, Donna. Pat in Minneapolis, Minnesota, you are next. Hi, Pat.
Yes, hi.
What can we do for you?
Yes, I have a problem with grass-carrying wasps, and they come in my windowsills, and I have brand-new windows. I had them when I had my old windows, but now I have new windows, and I'm still getting them. They come in, they bring grass in, and then they have cocoons. They make nests, and the cocoons are in the nest. And I have to clean them out, and I've just every year, and I'm just wondering if there's a way I can prevent them from coming in.
Yeah, so these grass-carrying wasps are really some neat creatures, and they have this unusual association with crank-out casement windows. There just seems to be enough of a groove at the top that they get up there. The story with those is they're looking for a tube-like structure, so that very top of the window works well for that. They go out and they collect tree crickets, which they bring back to the nest and feed to their young. In terms of preventing them, because they're really pretty harmless creatures to humans and unlikely to sting, if there's some way to examine the outside of the window, and perhaps improve the weather stripping or something like that so it seals up more snugly. That may keep them out. Otherwise, in my experience, they just don't harm or bother people. So it's maybe a little bit of an inconvenience, but occasionally you crank open the window and you have to brush a little bit of grass out of there.
Yeah, they're very interesting, actually. You see the cocoons in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
But I was just wondering if there was just something, because the new windows, I figured it's the new windows, I wouldn't have the problem, but it's the same window, and it's a brand new window, so.
Yeah,
I would suspect there must be just enough of a gap up towards the top they're getting in somehow. I wonder if maybe a little bit of foam, kind of that self-adhesive weather stripping might help you out in this case.
Okay, well, thanks for your help.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Jesse sent us a video, so we have it up on Facebook, and he says last week the whole area around Turtle Lake was posting pictures of painted lady butterflies. The sedums were loaded with them and with bees as well. So trying to get the there we go. We got the video going, and there's a bunch of painted ladies in that photo.
Wow.
So that's a pretty cool one. Thank you so much for sending that, Jesse. Anita in Hancock, Wisconsin. On to you now. Hi, Anita.
Hi. Thank you for having me on. I actually had a question on wasps, but I think one of the previous callers had the same question. I have, like, they're about an inch long, and they did have a nest outside the back door that I removed, but now they seem to go, they went over to the patio door and into the soffit. Do I need to, like, remove that soffit part to get rid of that nest? Because I do find them in the house dead every now and then.
Okay. Well, if it's in a part of the soffit area where they're really not bothering anyone, you could consider just waiting it out until they die out for the season. What will happen on occasion is they get into the soffit area, they make a paper mache type nest in there. If a few workers end up in the actual attic area, occasionally they end up accidentally coming down or falling through light fixtures because they see some light from below. But for the most part, they go in and out of that soffit area. I've seen cases where if they're in a soffit in the corner of a house or folks don't walk, it may not be worth doing anything about it. If it's close enough to doors and things like that, or you have allergy concerns, the way to go about dealing with these would be to use a powder or dust type formulation. And the thought is that we use a bulb duster, something like a squeeze condiment bottle that were empty, or you could even buy a cheap turkey baster and just label it insecticides on it so no one uses it for anything else. We want to puff that duster powder into the entrance. Then as they come and go, they'll track that in, and that usually works pretty well to eliminate the colony.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for calling. And Margie in Milwaukee, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, thank you. I am a frustrated gardener living in an apartment now. So I go and play in my son's garden sometimes.
Okay.
And in his front yard, he has a large old pine tree. And underneath it, I keep finding shells of some kind of a flying insect. My 3-year-old granddaughter tells me there's a cicadas, Grandma. But that's the only place I find them is under the pine tree. And when I clean them up, and then come back a week later, there's even more.
Yeah. And how long are they? How big are they?
They're at least an inch. They're kind of tannish, and it's like a shell. It's like their outside shell.
Yeah.
They've shedded it.
Yep.
And he also has little holes in his yard, less than a dime size, perfectly round, and his grass is real easy to pull up. I'm thinking he has grubs or something. Are those two related?
Well, they may be related to a certain extent in that the holes could potentially be from adult cicadas or the kind of juvenile cicadas crawling up above ground, because cicadas live down in the soil. They will often climb up onto trees or fence posts, molt one last time, and turn into adults. So it's really common to see cicadas, kind of the shed exoskeleton on tree trunks and fence posts, that sort of thing. So that's probably what those are. They might leave tiny holes in the soil near the base of the tree or elsewhere nearby. The grass symptoms, though, with the grass being really easy to pull up, I would be suspicious of grubs or something else going on. In particular, in the state, our commonest grub species we see is the white grub of Japanese beetles. And with the high Japanese beetle pressure this year, it wouldn't surprise me if we start seeing lots of cases of damage, and it's often September and October when we finally notice those reports of grub damage, because the grubs have been getting progressively larger and larger during the summer, and they're causing more damage. So what you could do is take a spade and dig around in the soil and see if you find white grubs. That would help you confirm if they're present or not.
I saw a slimy-looking gray thing recently, and it kind of looks like a...
slug?
Like a slug.
Okay.
Very
well could be slugs. Slugs thrive under damp conditions, and it's been rainy this year, so there's definitely a lot of slugs around. The slugs really shouldn't cause any significant turf damage, though. If that grass is easy to pull up, I'd really be suspicious of white grubs at this point.
White grubs, but so the holes really could be either grubs or the cicadas.
Well, and the grubs really wouldn't be digging holes. What could happen, though, is if you have grubs in your lawn, birds and other things can dig down into the lawn and cause damage kind of that way. But the grubs live down in the root zone. That's what they feed on, is the roots of the turf grass that eventually damages the grass enough that you can start kind of lifting it up or rolling it back like a carpet in extreme cases.
Okay, so all of these perfectly shaped little circle holes all over the lawn are probably the cicadas then?
Well, I wouldn't expect a very uniform distribution of holes. I really wonder if that might be something else going on.
You might need to dig up a little piece and take a look. That's almost the only way to know for sure.
Yeah.
Thank you, Margie, for calling. But, you know, get the spade out and pick up a little bit and take a look at it and see what's there. PJ Leash, our guest today. PJ is the head of the Insect Diagnostic Lab. He'll be with us right up until 12:30. We'll take a quick look at the news, then we'll be back. Stay with us. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller. My guest today, we talk the world of insects with PJ Leash, manager of the UW-Madison Insect Diagnostic Lab. Questions? I think there's one on the line open at 800-642-1234. We must have at least 50 posts of insect photos on our Facebook page. I hope you'll have a chance to go take a look. But you can also email us at ideas@wpr.org. What's going on today with PJ? And Bill in Park Falls has a question. Let's go there. Hi, Bill.
Hi, how are you doing today?
Good.
Yesterday I gathered up a trailer load of firewood I store in the woods up here in Park Falls, and I brought it home. And as I was noticing, as I was loading up the trailer, a couple different spots in the pile had about a half a coffee can of sawdust, and it seemed like ants were coming out of it. This was all red oak. And my concern is getting it home, throwing it in the basement, I'm going to have a problem with these ants, or are they just... not going to hurt anything.
Well, you have a good chance of having something like carpenter ants in there, although there could be some other things. In general, though, if you have firewood, my general thought is it may be best to store it outside if possible. If you start bringing things indoors, inside that firewood, especially if it were a dead, dying tree that had been cut down or came down in the storm, there's probably ants, and I can think of dozens of different types of beetles and other creatures that can be beneath the bark as larvae. If you bring it indoors where it's nice and warm, they go through their development fairly quickly. You can get all kinds of creatures to pop out of firewood if you stick it down in the basement.
Oh, yeah. I'm well aware of that. I've been doing this for a long time, but... I've never run into these ants like that, and the amount of sawdust there was quite a bit. I was just concerned if it would damage my home. The other bugs we can deal with.
Yeah. If it is something like carpenter ants, they really don't damage good, hard, sound wood. They're looking for rotting, soft, water-damaged wood. So you might even be able to look through that load of firewood, pick out the few, you know, bad pieces of wood that are maybe softer, have sawdust, set those to the side or burn those sooner than the others. But you may be able to prevent some nuisance ant issues like that. But I wouldn't expect them to damage the good sound wood in your house.
All right.
Okay, this is well-seasoned oak, and if I leave it outside maybe till it freezes, I'd be better off, possibly.
Well, yeah, that certainly would help, and typically if you're able to bring in enough for a few days or maybe a week at a time, but if you bring it all in and it sits there, then all kinds of insects can become active.
There. Yeah, okay. Well, thank you very much for your help.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. You know, Bill was talking about ants, and that reminds me, Kala, who one of my students who's sitting in with us today, wondered about edible insects. She tried an ant the other day, and it didn't turn out the greatest for her.
So I guess, you know, that quote from Tom Hanks, you know, life is like a box of chocolates. Yeah. When you try insects, they can be a little bit different. I recall when I was younger spending some time down in the rainforest in Belize, and we tried some local termites that the guide had pointed out to us that actually tasted like peppermint. So that's kind of at the good end of the spectrum. I've tried some other ones that were not as pleasant. When you look at the topic of edible insects, the things people are using these days for snacks and crackers and bars and things like that tends to be things like crickets, mealworms, waxworm larvae, things that don't have much of a flavor to begin with, and they typically mix them with something else, seasoning,
chocolate,
yeah, chocolate nuts, things to use the insects more as a protein source. In terms of just eating straight insects, from my experience, a lot of them probably aren't going to taste the best, or they may not have much of a flavor, more of a kind of a gooey texture when you actually eat them, though.
There we go. Well, let's go to Mark in Kenosha next, who has a question. Hi, Mark.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I am bothered by a burrowing insect. It looks like a bumblebee. It's big. It's chunky like that. It burrows into my cedar siding and in a roughly half-inch diameter hole. And, you know, it responds well to insect spray. I can kill it. But is there something to deter them from wanting to burrow into my siding in the first place? Am I missing a trick?
Yes, potentially. So what you're dealing with sounds like carpenter bees. And if you went down south to Kentucky and Tennessee and places like that in warmer states, carpenter bees can be very, very common, especially in spring, April and May, and times of the year like that. Very, very easy to spot. In Wisconsin, we don't see them very regularly other than the far southeastern corner of the state. So Kenosha, Racine, Milwaukee, Waukesha, places like that. In Madison and farther on, we just really don't see them elsewhere in the state. The thing that they're looking for is softer wood that is unfinished or unpainted. If it is wood that has been painted or the surface sealed, even with a clear polyurethane, it really isn't very attractive to them anymore. So one of the simplest things you could do would simply be to paint that wood. That may stop it from being attractive to them. If you leave it as kind of bare or unfinished wood, they may continue to be a little bit of a nuisance in the future.
I do stain it rather than paint it, and that would probably be a slight deterrent, but it needed a coat of stain even, which is what I just did this summer, so maybe that will help.
Okay. Yeah. If it's just a kind of a light stain that does more of change the color, I wouldn't expect that to deter them very much. You need
kind of a
thicker coating on there to kind of smooth out the surface of the wood and make it unattractive to them.
Okay. Well, good to know.
All right.
I can do.
Thanks a lot for calling, Mark. And Tom and Wanakee up next. Hi, Tom. Thank you for calling.
Good afternoon. Just another question about our favorite Japanese beetles. What should we treat, or how can we treat them as when they're grubs, or is there anything in the fall or springtime? I know we shouldn't be using the Bayer insect concentrate anymore.
Yeah, so when it comes to treating for Japanese beetle, it really depends on the situation. If we're going to target the adults, small plants versus large plants, there are some differences. If we're targeting the grubs, in theory, to get the best grub control, you'd want to do that right around the time of egg laying. So late June and early July, there are some products that work very well. You'd apply it to your lawn, and that should prevent issues. If you haven't done that and all of a sudden this time of the year you notice grub damage in your lawn, there are some products you can get, typically a granular product at the hardware store you can put down. That can help correct the issue. It's probably not going to take care of the issue entirely, but that can help. For the adult beetles, it really depends on in July. If we got small plants, we've got some contact insecticide sprays that could be used in theory. For larger trees, we have some systemic products, although there are some concerns with pollinators. And for certain trees like lindens, we can't use those anymore. So
right, that's what we've got, the lindens. And, well, I don't think I'll have any leaves to rake this year.
Unfortunately, I mean, you're not alone. A lot of folks with linden trees just got clobbered, and one of the reasons for that is some of those neonicotinoid systemic products that have pollinator concerns, it now says on the container you can't use them on lindens of any kind because we want to make sure to not
We don't want to do
bees.
That. So perhaps with something like the Grub X or whatever in late June, early July.
Well, and that would really only be useful if you are worried about grub damage to your lawn. Now, I do get folks calling me, and they want to treat their lawn so that they won't have the adult beetles around. And unfortunately, it doesn't quite work like that.
It doesn't work that way.
Yeah, the beetles are such strong flyers. If you've got a golf course down the road or sports field or something like that, they can fly in from a half mile away. So you can kill them all in your yard and still have adult beetles around.
As Phil told us last month, Wanakee is just a great incubator for them with all the sod and everything else around here. So
We know the female beetles specifically like to go to low-cut irrigated turf grass. So if you had in some fresh, very lush-looking sod, that can really be kind of a bullseye for the females.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks for calling. And on Facebook, Debbie sent us a really cool photo. Let's see, what would we have here? It's green and it's got little protrusions coming out, kind of bumps with that are orange and yellow in color. Really pretty. It's a bright green caterpillar.
Yeah, so this is from our giant sphinx moth group. Looks like it's probably the Cecropia moth.
It's 4 inches long.
Yeah, they can get to be good size. And if you think about it, it makes sense because the adult sphinx moths for Cecropia and Polyphemus and relatives, they've got wingspans of 4 to maybe 6 inches. So they can have these very, very large caterpillars.
They're really pretty. Bill in Madison up next. Hi, Bill.
Hi, Bill. Larry, haven't talked to you for a while. We've found in around our porch what we've identified as the brown stink bugs.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering, are they harmful? Or we don't have very many. I see them, I just kill them, but they're real hard, and I'm wondering if they're harmful.
So to people and pets, they're really not going to harm you at all. They don't bite. They're technically plant feeders. About the worst they would do to you is they smell bad if you crush them. Some folks say it smells like musty gym socks or pungent coriander. Outdoors, though, they can feed on an awful wide range of plants. So if you had an orchard, for example, this would be a big concern for you. And I know a lot of the fruit growers are watching for this brown marmorated stink bug. Inside, they're mostly just a nuisance, though.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks for calling, Bill. Kevin in Merrimack, on to you now. Hi, Kevin.
Yeah, hi, guys. Just wanted to call and let you know that a while back I was inspired to do what I can for monarch butterflies. So out of my studio here at the Castle Rock Atelier shortly out of Merrimack, I collected actually one caterpillar and then raised that one. And it flew off as a butterfly, and then got two eggs out here and put them in there and then raised those two. And just this past week, they, came out of their chrysalises and flew off. So I'm doing what I can. It was fun to watch and things like that, and, look forward to next year. And I just wonder, is middle of September the time that the fourth generation starts to go on its migration? And that's my question, and I'll listen off air. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling.
Yeah, so in terms of monarch migration, we are at that point in the year where some of those monarchs are starting to head south. It can vary a little bit year to year and temperatures and that sort of thing. There's a couple of websites out there that have maps where you can kind of watch as that migration progresses, and you can report your own observations. I know if you Google search Journey North and put the word monarch after it, that particular website has a good map on it, and I checked that recently, and there were some reports. We often see them along the Lake Michigan border. We can get large numbers of them, but we are at the time of the year where monarchs are starting to head south.
All right. Thanks again for that. And Marion in Concord, it's your turn. Hi. Thank you for calling.
You're welcome. Good afternoon, gentlemen. This is a question regarding my mother-in-law. My mother-in-law is 86 years old. She loves to garden. She was gardening 4 weeks ago, and a caterpillar bit her underneath her, the top of her neck. It was green and yellow, about an inch long, with kind of grayish spines, and she has been deathly sick from it. But she went to urgent care. They gave her something to reduce the inflammation, and they put her on prednisone, which made her very sick. Do you have any idea what that might have been that we could tell the doctor? Maybe he could look it up?
Well, hard to tell without seeing a picture of the exact caterpillar. Now, one thing that comes to mind, when I think of caterpillars and skin irritation, I really wouldn't expect a caterpillar to bite and cause much, if any, type of reaction. But a number of caterpillars can have these kind of sharp, bristly spines, or we call them urticating hairs. And with certain caterpillars, that can really cause some unpleasant skin irritation. Now, typically, from what I've read about it, it tends to be a fairly temporary thing. But I do wonder if it's one of these caterpillars that had some of these kind of stinging hairs on the body that could cause skin irritation.
Yeah, this has been 4 weeks, and every time I see her, she's not herself. She's just feeble and dragged out, and she said, I just don't feel well. So, okay, well, that's not going to be much of a help, but thanks for trying to help.
Yeah, thank you for calling. Appreciate your call. And let's see, on Facebook we have a photo from William of a brown-looking bug, or no, not a bug. It almost looks like a caterpillar, but it's got a bunch of eyes. It's brown, and it's got these big white eyes across it.
Yeah, so this looks like it's from our sphinx moth group, and with that coloration and those five very distinct eye spots, it looks like it's probably our Pandorus sphinx moth, which can be fairly common. I've probably had 5-6 reports of these coming into my lab just in the last month or two.
No. Interesting. Roger in Deer Park, Illinois, your turn. Hi, Roger.
Hi. I did get bit by, I'm a marmorated brown stink bug. Is that what you're calling them?
Yeah.
I did get bit by one, and it was a pretty nasty sting, but it didn't have any swelling or anything like that. It's just a little hole. It bit me in the top of my foot, and so they do sting.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, I'm not saying it couldn't happen. Typically, though, brown marmorated stink bugs are plant feeders. They might bite defensively on occasion. There are also some other stink bugs that are predatory stink bugs. Something like that might be more likely to nibble. For the most part, I would expect it to be more of an accidental type of thing. They'd probably figure out pretty quickly that we aren't a good meal for them. It might have some type of localized reaction, but I typically wouldn't expect much of a severe reaction from something like that.
Huh.
Okay, it was under the covers. It was in my bed. It was under the covers.
Okay.
I caught it, so I know what it was, and I'm a nature photographer.
Yeah. I would wonder then if it were getting smushed a little bit under the covers.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's sorry for that, Roger, but you're one of those rare exceptions to the rule, unfortunately, in that case. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Oh, man. Mary Ann in Gordon, Wisconsin has something for us. Hi, Mary Ann.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I love this show. I just wanted to mention that I have planted many sedums all throughout my gardens, and they are, of course, beautiful this time of year. And when I walk by, probably a dozen or two dozen monarchs fly up. The monarchs are feeding on the sedums right now.
Oh, yeah. Good for you.
It's very beautiful. I divide the sedums every spring, start a new patch, primarily for the monarchs and the honeybees.
Yeah.
So plant your sedums if you want to see the monarchs.
Yeah, and they're beautiful plants besides.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Bill in Ashland wonders, he has a problem with earwigs, wants to know how to get rid of earwigs. Nasty looking things.
Yeah, so I don't know of many fans of earwigs, Larry. The story with earwigs, and this probably is why folks don't like them, is they tend to hang out in kind of tucked away dark areas. They don't like to be out in the bright open. They like damp areas, nooks and crannies. If you have them getting into your house, for example, I tend to take a look at what's nearby. If you have lots of plants right along the foundation of your house, hostas and ferns and things like that keeps the moisture up. That's good habitat for them. Dense mulch beds, that sort of thing. In a case like that, if you're mostly concerned with them getting in, I would look at physical means of control. If you can get better weather stripping on the bottom of a door, that kind of thing, to physically keep them out, that's probably your best long-term solution. If you can keep a gap between your foundation of the home and maybe a foot or two before any plants kind of dry that area out, that can help as well. Otherwise, there are some cases where folks could use some of the gardener landscape insecticides and really give the mulch around their foundation a good soaking where those earwigs may be hiding out, and that might help as well.
Karen in St. Germain up next. Hi, Karen.
Hi. I tell you, I live in Madison, but I'm up here enjoying St. Germain on vacation.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah. Beautiful. I have two things to bring up. One is my elderly father has some yellow wasps that have built us a funny little clear, round, silvery-looking home inside of his Weber grill, and he doesn't know what to do about that. And then the other thing is when I was recently at the Capitol, I saw this six-legged, flat, black bug with this very distinctive, bright yellow U-shape on its back, and I just had never seen that. I wondered what it was.
Well, he should be closing those holes on his Weber grill. That would have been one way to keep them out. Now they'd be kind of mad if you closed all those holes up, probably.
Yeah, because in this situation we're dealing with a grill, I really wouldn't use any type of insecticide just because we're going to be putting food on that grill at some point. As Larry mentioned, if we had kept it all the holes closed up, that would have prevented it in the first place. What I would maybe consider at this point would be just to kind of wait things out until that colony dies out in the fall, and then thoroughly clean that nest out of there so you can use it in the future, and then in the future keep those holes closed when the grill isn't in use, especially if it's used infrequently. That would give them an opportunity to build up that nest in there. That's probably your best options for the time being. For the insect with the U-shape on its back, I'm scratching my head a bit at the moment. If you happen to see it again, or if you happen to get a picture and could email it to me, that would really help me narrow it down. There's a few things I can think of. There are certain wasps that can have, and some of the sawflies might have structures or U-shapes like that, but I'm scratching my head a bit.
Yeah, it doesn't have wings, and as it crawls along, when it turns, you know, its body is curving.
So is it kind of worm-like then, or is it kind of hard and crunchy looking like a beetle?
It's not. It doesn't look like a beetle to me. I don't know how to describe it, but it has very six very short little legs, and then it has kind of a tapering tail, I guess you'd call it.
Wow, I don't know.
Yeah, we may have to watch for pictures for that one.
Karen, if you've got a photo, if you get a photo of it and send that photo to the Insect Diagnostic Lab, UW Insect Diagnostic Lab, it's a great place to go. PJ Leash can take a look at it and hopefully tell you what it is. Thanks a lot for that call. And PJ, thank you so much. Here we are out of time, but really appreciate it. And you'll be back on September 20th, if I'm not mistaken. PJ Leash, our guest today, he heads the Insect Diagnostic Lab at UW-Madison. Tomorrow at 11, Rick Cini back with us to help you with your air travel questions. So I hope you can join us for that. And please stay with us. Lots more in store here on the Ideas Network. Thanks for listening.